welcome to the Collapsing Game Shelf Podcast, a podcast by a bunch of people who have way too many board games. I'm Tom, and I'm joined by...
Debbie.
Adam.
And Justin.
And we...
should we start that again?
Nope, it's fine. And we have just finished a game of Mansions of Madness, second edition.
Maddening.
So maddening. Another entry in the Arkham Horror universe? Expanded universe?
Yeah.
Universe of expanded games universe? It's a bunch of games.
There's a word I'm thinking.
This is one of them.
I don't know.
What? Collection?
No.
No.
Family of games?
No.
Umbrella?
No.
Arkham Horror universe?
Yeah.
Repertoire.
Repertoire.
Sure. Repertoire.
I mean.
Repertoire.
This game is not one of mine, so I'm going to pass it over to Justin to explain. Since I think you're the one who's most familiar with this bad boy.
I've just been handed a...
That's the back of the box right there.
Fantastic. Well, I'll start up with this.
I'm going to go check on my kit.
Okay. Do you want us to...
No,
okay.
Keep going.
So the little blurb from the back of the box starts off with a little mood. Horrific monsters and spectral presence lurk in the manors, crypts, schools, monasteries, and derelict buildings near Arkham, Massachusetts. Some spin dark conspiracies, while others wait for hapless victims to devour and drive insane. It's up to a handful of brave investigators to explore these cursed places and uncover the truth about the living nightmares within. Designed by Corey Kanzeka.
Oh, yeah, we don't care about that shit.
It's a
rude.
It's a macabre game of horror, insanity, and mystery for 2 to 5 players. Each game takes place within a pre-designed story that provides players with a unique map, several combinations, and plot threads. These threads affect the monsters and investigators may encounter, the clues they need to find, and which climactic story ending they will ultimately experience. One player takes the role of the keeper. Oh, this is actually the... Well, that's actually from the first edition. So, let's just end it there. So, Mansions of Madness is a game that requires an app, but it allows 1 to 5 people to pick their own little individual investigator, and it kind of plays out often like a mystery game where you're going into the this mansion or this crime scene. It's not always a mansion, which belies the name somewhat.
We're going to do the how-to here.
Okay, yeah.
Not the what it's about, but the how-to.
Okay.
How do you madness in the mansion?
How do you madness? Well, first of all, you get yourself a phone or... a laptop computer so that you can actually control the sort of the inner workings of the board game.
So if you don't already have a $300 piece of equipment, you need to pass on this one?
Yeah. You can use a laptop, you can use a desktop computer, but you need a computer, a phone, or a tablet. Because
all you guys have phones? Circa Blizzard 2019? 2018?
18. That 18? Was not this year. That was last year.
That was last year. Oh, it was too. It was last year. That's right. Yes. Don't all you guys have cell phones? Yes.
Anyway, no. You probably
what?
Do.
Sorry, I lost. I did not know.
So you need the app is what I'm hearing.
Yes, you need the app. But beyond that, the game starts off with everybody picking their individual investigator. So each guy has a little card on the back. It has a nice little blurb about them. And then on the front, a sort of stat line, which is generally how many dice you'll be rolling to solve mysteries or do a...
Punch goblins.
Punch goblins, yeah.
Monterey Jack.
Yes, that is one of the
characters.
Who's
that? What was that guy's name? York something?
Gravedigger? York the Gravedigger.
Gravedigger. Sunday.
Yeah.
You got your generic trophy private eye. And the mini and the other, the debutante.
I was a child.
Yeah, Debbie was a small urchin.
Yeah.
Who was very good at running away from people. Yeah. But most of the game kind of plays out where you'll start off in a single room and all the map tiles are separate. So that whenever you go into the next room, you'll tell the app, I'm entering this room. And then it will kind of expand the story from there. So it'll tell you to grab, hallway B, So you'll grab it out of the box after you sort through it for, you know, 20 minutes and plonk it down. And then you kind of populate it with investigation tokens. And that way that you can kind of physically see where there's, you know, things to investigate or interact with on the board. And then on the app side, it will actually give a full description of that. So when you place down the tile, the app will give this thing for you to read out. Like you see loose papers scattered across the table side, and then you can go there and maybe you have to like jimmy the lock on the door or you know, just smash it with your strength depending on what happens. Yeah, there's a lot of different things that can happen.
Yeah, loose papers being Monterey Jack's fucking kryptonite. I tell you, it's like you walk into a room, there's 8 dead bodies in the eastern hallway. There's a man hanging from the ceiling, and there's a bunch of loose papers on a desk. I will investigate the loose papers.
I love those loose papers, man.
Oh, hey, man.
Those loose papers helped us win.
Yeah, they certainly can. Although at one game I played with one of my friends, there were some there was a loose paper that got wedged in between two boards in this shed out in this field, and he spent half the game just trying to like pry it out, but he was really like his character had no dexterity checks. So he'd be rolling his dice and just failing. And I could just imagine this guy just like slowly trying to like pull this paper out between these two boards, like just gently. And then he's just slipping every time.
The entire time there's some other guys down the hallway. Jack, we got to go.
Otherwise, there's like a zombie fight going off in the background, gunshots. And he's just there gingerly playing
zombie
with
dogs,
this piece
where
of
are
paper.
You?
See, I feel like if a game has something like that in it, it is a red herring. Like, they will not make something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think.
No, this game does have a lot of red herrings. Like, there's the way the game plays out is there's kind of a hidden turn counter going in the background. So you need to kind of play the game with a sense of urgency. You can't just dawdle along and slowly move up the board because bad things are constantly going to happen. Every time you take a turn where you get two actions, you can move a few spaces on the board, interact with an item, attack something, you know, open a door, and then it'll go on to the next turn. But every time it goes to the next turn, it goes into the mythos phase is what it's called, is where kind of the app gets to do bad things to you. So it can, you know, you might start losing your mind or you'll lose your vision and go running headfirst into a wall, and all of a sudden you're going to take a whole bunch of wounds and stuff. So it's slowly adding on this extra burden constantly on your characters so that you never feel like you have enough time and you never feel like you're prepared enough to go into that next room and fight or discover what's there.
And you're never really safe because I remember, like, even I think Monterey Jack took the most damage from just like running into a door jam or something.
Yes, yes. With a broken arm.
Yes. No, that happened twice. First, you kind of went crazy and you started beating your head against the wall because of the voices in your head.
That's right.
All the doors disappeared, so you went running down the hallway full speed, and then the wall appeared in front of you and slammed into it.
It just appeared and you
ended
in front
up,
of you.
Yep, and then you just ended up breaking your arm. You just weren't having a good day.
No, it was not. Monterey Jack did not have a great time in the mansion.
And I guess one thing I should point out is the main difference between the first and second edition, if you're thinking about what's so different, is the second edition has the app that takes the role of that keeper. So it's a fully co-op game, this one, whereas the first edition had somebody playing kind of that dungeon keeper role. So it was more of a all versus one.
Sort of like Descent, right?
Yeah, except you kind of had to RP it a bit.
Oh, okay.
Because in general, you could very easily just focus on one person and ruin their day.
Sure.
Whereas the app kind of takes that anger and it puts it towards this bodiless third party. So you can get as angry as you want against the app, and you don't have to feel bad about calling Tom a dickwad.
Ouch.
Tom?
An RP being role-playing, right?
Yes.
Like you didn't have to. In Descent, as I played it was like one person was playing against the other people in this like dungeon crawling type game and was just like mercilessly trying to murder you. You couldn't get very far in Mansions of Madness by just trying to kill the other team because you'd be they'd probably be dead within the first like three turns.
Yeah, and then generally you're not having that chance to explore and develop the story. You kind of want to lead them on in the first one, and then, you know, in the final climactic battle, just
yeah, you want punch them in the to gut. Find the room filled with a monster that's made out of hooves.
Yeah,
right. Like
yeah.
that's what gross. The whole game is about. Gross. Is like
so many tentacles and hooves.
Yeah, it's just like this is a monster just made out of hooves. Yeah, there's like, what the fuck is that? That's what you want people to be saying.
It had like three heads.
Well, I imagine weird. There's just no end of the horrific shit you can come up with.
Oh, yeah. What did I miss, everyone?
No, I think that seems like it. Like, there's more rules in the rule book.
For
like,
sure.
There's the Fantasy Flight's new thing is that they have the Learn to Play guide and the rules reference. But I think that the main thing is that the app helps to abstract away almost everything that you really give a shit. Like anything that you don't know how to do is already handled by put down this tile here. This
yeah.
is what the thing is going to do.
Oh, roll, you find roll a knife this, on the, roll this check. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get three? No. Ah, a rock fell on you, right?
Yeah.
Like, bah, see?
I could only imagine how thick that goddamn manual must have been in the first edition.
There is a lot for the kind of guy playing the dungeon keeper to keep track of. Yeah,
yeah
that
brings you this.
After, like, I think I'm the only one here who's played both versions, and the app expedites the game so much because in the first edition you would have to make the board beforehand. So that's like easily half an hour of setup. Just before you even start playing in the first edition.
Gross.
Because you have to build and populate the entire board. Whereas in this one, because you're building it as you go and you're exploring it together, you don't have all that unloaded on the front end.
Which is actually really nice. Like that's the one thing that I kind of liked about this is that you don't know what's on the other side of those doors, right? Like you're finding out as it comes. It adds maybe a bit of a time aspect in the sense that it's like you go through the door and it's like, hey, now I got to go find this tile. Here's the code for the tile. You got to shift, like filter through them. You can't preset it up. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, that time isn't really lost because you didn't do it in the first place. Right.
Yeah.
So I actually really liked that aspect of this. That's probably one of my favorite parts about this is that we had no idea how the board was going to sprawl on the table. And so, yeah, you might have to do some shifting around while you're playing and kind of move things one direction or another because you really don't know where it's going. But I feel like you can't metagame it in a sense. You can't be like, there seems to be a lot more depth to that side of the board, so we should just aim that way because that's got to be the right way to go. This one was, it was completely blind. It was, here's a couple doors. Pick one. Have fun.
Yeah, I think it really captured what a investigation would feel like if you were trying to find some sort of disgusting outworldly horror, right? Like that's one of the things from when we played
in a building you've never been to.
Yeah. From Elder Sign that I think was missing is it's like you have all these things which look spooky and shit, but it's, you know, it's like, oh, you're going to put down a card and then you're going to roll some dice and something's going to happen. And like, you're either going to kill the thing or beat whatever. And it's all abstracted away, but nobody really knows what any of it means. And who cares? You're just trying to, you know what the final boss looks like. It's a thing with 6,000 eyes or whatever, but
countless eyes.
Have more or less all the information. Whereas in this, you're actually exploring a mansion. You're actually, you know, some dude comes running through the door and is like, get these people out of my house. And you're just like, when the fuck did the butler come from? And there's all these weird things that are just happening, which is kind of more interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot more surprise.
Yeah. And I think that's what you need in a game about shit popping out of another dimension.
Yeah. You need a little surprise.
You need a little bit of surprise.
It's unrealistic on its own. It just becomes stupid when you can.
Yeah. I'm so taken out of it when it's like, anyway. This just isn't real enough. Anyway, the first playthrough was like some mansion and people were disappearing. We had to go investigate for some reason. You got a grave robber, the psychopath detective.
Yes,
a child and the wizard.
The team that you throw together to investigate some of these things can be somewhat random.
Yeah,
and so, we did. We randomized this, right? I think you were the only one that actually...
Because you were Dexter Drake.
No, that was Nathan.
Oh, Nathan was here. That's right.
That's right. We
Nathan,
had a fifth player.
We had five people.
Yeah, we had a special guest appearance.
Because Nathan was playing Dexter Drake. You were playing...
Was the millionaire or the politician?
You were the millionaire.
Yeah,
playboy or whatever. Yeah. And then we had the gravedigger, and we had
Monterey Jack.
And we the had archaeologist.
The urchin. And like, how did the five of you fucking get together and end up here?
We're part of a secret society of investigators.
And it's just... Like that
very secret
skate by that makes very no sense. Secret. But you get the nice introduction of like what are we doing, and it makes you read out this thing which you can play up a bit, and like then you go in and it's like what the hell is going on? There's papers you can investigate, and there's three doors, and there's somebody screaming behind that one, and Adam runs off to go look at the papers. There's somebody being mauled in another room, and it's
like three people fighting some sort of giant worm snake in the kitchen while Adam's. Looking at some papers, and I think Debbie
was
staring at this painting, trying to figure out why the planets were. You know,
Gravedigger is sitting there kicking the shit out of this flying snake beast, trying to save the butler, and it's just like, man, this is hilarious.
Yeah,
like I could not have been more pleased with how that game started out than Adam looking through a desk while I'm kicking the shit out of a snake.
I'm an archaeologist. We're going to get rich.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is so funny. It was so dumb.
Yeah, and the nice thing about it is because of the app, even that same scenario will play out differently. Not every time you play it, obviously, but there's a few key things that'll be different.
Yeah.
Because I remember the first time I played that one, I was the doctor, and I was going to run around and help people out. But I ended it up just standing in the main entranceway, holding off all these cultists that kept on wandering in through the front door with my fire extinguisher, just beating them in the kneecaps.
Man, the fire extinguisher was great, too.
It's amazing. Like it's funny that the game, and this is, I think this is true for any game, is because they're the characters and the like the objects and the things the way things work, they're not integrated, like they're very separately designed, and so it can be very amusing how some of them work together. So I, as a child, went and asked the butler if he had a gun, and he was like, yeah, sure, here you go,
hey,
man.
Do you have any weapons? And just handed you a revolver.
And I ended up like beating the snot out of things with my fucking gun as a child. Like, how did that happen?
Oh, and you were running around with your whiskey bottle. So you had your painkillers, your whiskey.
That's right.
You're 45.
That's true. As a child.
I was a drunk kid with a gun, and I had runners, bloody runners, right?
Yeah.
And it made me move faster. And so I think that aspect works for any game. I think every game kind of has their, you know, you have your stack of characters, you have your stack of weapons, you have your stack of, right? And they're kind of all independent of each other, and then they just kind of mix together. But sometimes those mixtures are just bloody hilarious. And I like when I started that with a whiskey bottle, the whiskey bottle was full, and then I decided to drink it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it was like, hey, guess what? You can break it and you have a shard of
glass, a broken bottle,
and you can just fucking sit there and stab people. And I was like, hey, this is, you know, I can foresee this probably not being a great picture, but it was damn fun. So that I found funny. And then this game particularly, it, for whatever reason, really kind of resonated that combination. Like, I'm sure we've all played numerous games where you've had really odd mixtures of a character with, you know, certain things that, you know, like they don't have hands, so they can't hold on to that, but somehow they still have the ability to have it and things that. But for some reason in this game, it just heightened it. And I think it had a lot to do with the fact that you didn't know anything else, so you couldn't pay attention to other things. You kind of had to pay attention to what you knew right now and what was in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of heightens the entire experience. And that was really neat for me.
Plus it's a hilarious image. You can just picture your small child is running around.
Just blasting people away while the investigators like rooting through a drawer. Like
Adam.
Bam, 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 bam.
Well, you know.
Papers. Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah. The papers had to be good, man. They had to have something good.
They were important.
They were good. Bam, they were very important.
Yeah, we had to find the journal that was over there.
That's right.
Yeah
the journal gave us a lot.
Whoa, let's not give too many spoilers here. People might want to enjoy this thing themselves.
That's true. Good point. Yeah, spoilers.
So I got a question.
Yeah.
This might be something that we don't often talk about this, but how much money are we talking about when it comes to this game?
Giddy up.
Oh, my good God.
Yeah, no, this game is not cheap. Let me check what it is right now.
It's like 100 and some, wasn't it?
Yeah, I imagine this is probably about $100.
That's not horrible.
Maybe,
From a gaming aspect, that's not horrible.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of board games now are running, like, $40 to $60. I mean, if you're on Kickstarter, then, you know, sky's the limit, but...
It's unfortunate when I, in my experience, don't what's think $100 it on is Amazon? A lot.
$115 on eBay.
The Zon.ca has got it on for $119.33.
Yeah, okay.
Canadian?
Yeah, probably on
Canadian.
As of right now, which is like the first thing.
So probably Canadian, so 120 Canadian and 80 to 100 American.
But yeah. I think it's a very weighty box. It comes with a lot of
Oh, yeah.
Of,
you
like,
get a lot of stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
A lot of substance.
If you're into that, if you're
then
into
you can
that
paint
sort of
them
thing.
If you're so inclined.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the models are all really good quality.
That's a big, that for me is a big thing. Normally, I don't ask about how much something costs, but when you get kind of the experience that you get out of this, I think that says a lot, right? When you're, I mean, $100 is really not that bad.
I mean, if you...
For certain board, like, I mean, you could buy two board games for that, for sure.
Sometimes I like to think about it in terms of other things you could be doing. Is there a movie that five of you could have gone to that would have provided as much fun? I mean, I had more fun playing this than some of the movies I've watched.
For sure.
It's true.
So, yeah. I mean, if you think about it that way.
And you're only going to see that once, right? You only get one playthrough of that movie, whereas this you're going to get multiples.
I'll have one because it probably takes forever to set up and we're never going to play it again. But it was a good time.
It didn't take too long to set up.
No, not the setup.
The play.
Oh, yeah.
It did take like an hour and a half or whatever to get through, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of, that's on the short end.
And that was
end.
A short, yeah. I remember it took us definitely 2 hours, for sure. And that was the shortest, I think you had the shortest.
I think the one we played was the shortest one.
Yeah.
It said, I think, 60 to 90 minutes.
But I do think this is the kind of game where you would set up, or I would, definitely set up a night over and say, like, I'm gonna get two other people together and we're gonna play this goddamn game.
Yeah,
because I had a great time playing this and I thought that, like, I want to see more of what's going on. I want to have more missions. I think it was interesting, the scenario that we provided. It didn't like shock me. I wasn't like, oh, it was
a very kind of tropey.
It was the butler the whole time, but it was fun. Like it was a really good time, and I like the idea of a co-op game where you can spend. Because I'm having a hard time thinking of any other games that are quite this involved that are co-op. I mean, you can get four other people together and have a really good time exploring a mansion, especially if this is in your wheelhouse of what you like.
I mean, beyond Gloomhaven.
Pandemic.
Pandemic's like an hour at most, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you also don't get the vision of somebody, a tiny child running around with a fire extinguisher
and a whiskey bottle and a gun and
caving in zombie dogs.
Now, I mean, for myself, like, I've never really been, you know, completely wrapped up in the whole Lovecraft, you know, mythos. It's never something that's really grabbed me. I've never read any of Lovecraft's writings.
It's never gotten its tentacles in you?
It's never got its tentacles in me.
Tendrils?
Tendrils, both. Whatever.
Both.
Yeah, little bit of column A, little bit of column B. I mean, I've played various Lovecraft themed games. I've played Arkham Horror itself. We played the
Elder Signs.
I thought that was good. I had the most fun of any Cthulhu Lovecraft based game that I have ever had playing this game right here.
Yeah.
I would gladly play this game again just about any time. I really liked the exploration aspect. I loved that things were hidden, but they still kind of made sense. It's, you know, like, you know, you walk into this thing and you only see the main room. Like, mm-hmm. you see the entryway, and then, you know, you can maybe see the kitchen off to one side, but you have to explore. You have to find out. It's like, well, you know what? We got to go upstairs because logically speaking, a bedroom would probably be upstairs, and logically speaking, an office, well, it could be upstairs. It could be downstairs. Who knows? So you get to go and explore a little bit, and you build you build the mansion as you play, which is one of the biggest things. One of the things that I've always loved about Betrayal at House on the Hill. Betrayal at House on the Hill has the exact same thing where you get to explore and you get to uncover things and you get to develop as you go. It's probably one of my favorite game mechanics is that mm-hmm. unknown. Oh, what's behind this door? What's behind that door? Some games do it better than others. I'm looking at you, level 7.
Level 7 was, everything was just too generic. You were never worried about what was on the next door because it was just one of two things.
Exactly.
It was another hallway that might have a vent.
Yeah.
Maybe I have to stop moving.
It was always square.
Yes.
Like, it was always the same size.
Yo, guys, maybe there's two vents in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's funny, Adam, and I'm going to call you out on this.
Sure.
It's funny that you say that. So you've brought up House on the Hill.
Betrayal, yeah.
Betrayal, House on the Hill, that's it, sorry. You've brought that up a handful of times thus far. That's being kind.
We're going to have to play that one day.
Yeah. Why? Like, hey, we've been together six years, and we've never played it.
I'll play it right now. Get it out.
All I'm saying is
shut down the podcast.
We're doing it live.
Playing it right now.
Well, no, and that's just, I find it interesting that every time we have this discussion, this is what you bring up. But I'm also very curious to know how they develop the mechanic of the hidden in paper. Because I think that that's the big piece about this is that because it's digital, it allows it to be hidden. So I'm very curious to know how Betrayal does that. In paper, like that for me would be...
The difference is that Betrayal at House on the Hill is totally random. Like this has a story built into the application.
Yeah.
Which is what I really like about this over House on the Hill.
Yeah.
House on the Haunted Hill. Betrayal at House on the Haunted Hill.
Yes.
The thing is with that one, you like have a stack of tiles and you pull one off and then that's the room. But so you can end up with like, oh, here's your foyer and here's the sauna. And you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then you get eaten by a rat. Okay,
so that makes sense.
Yeah, the House on the Hill, the layout doesn't make any sense.
So that makes sense to me because that's what I really like about the digital part of this is that it makes sense. And I cannot figure out how you would be able to do that. On paper, without having like a 50-page manual where it's like choose your adventure, right? And it's like you're going through this room, cool. Turn to page 85, and it tells you what tile you're going to put, right? Like, there's no other way to do that. So the fact that they've been able to actually take that step into the digital world and use it, it's a downside. That's probably one of the first things I think that somebody in this room said was, "Oh, Tom, so if you don't have the $300 device in your pocket, you can't play this game." Well, no, but reality is that's what makes this game
a little more unique
what it is
I mean they did replicate it in paper in the first edition which sounds like a fucking nightmare. I don't think that I would play this if it was the first edition like happens. I don't believe me, I've set up games for half an hour before people have come by and I don't know that I ever want to do that again.
It's true.
What they did in the first edition. So in the first edition, as the keeper, the map would all be there, but as explorers, you wouldn't really necessarily know where to go because all the cards were the same size. So you would know there was something maybe in that closet, but you have no idea if it's useful or not. And then the keeper kind of has to kind of guide you. Like you hear a noise in the furnace room or something. But the keeper can also choose like kind of one of three options about how the story develops. So you might be playing on the same map every time, but it's going to be different objectives in different locations.
So it's like a very different D&D-esque.
Yeah, it is. I think that's kind of why I liked the first edition a lot was because you had a kind of a very D&D light.
Yeah.
A nice kind of compact one-off experience that you could role play to your heart's content or just play very mechanically. Mm-hmm. Whereas this one I also really like because I don't have to spend half an hour to an hour setting up the map before people show up. And it kind of takes away some of that burden. Because a lot of people with the all versus one don't like being picked on. Either they don't like playing the bad guy or they don't like being, you know, there's a lot of, you can feel singled out, which isn't fun.
Well, and you, like people like me, I don't have an imagination for it. I would not do well on that side of the table because I just don't do well with that kind of, I'm a little too scientific, logical,
but you straight can be, lines. You can still be logical.
Mm-hmm. I'm in Adam's boat. I really liked it. So
one small nitpick that I do have.
Well, there's some nits to pick.
There, I mean, these are all small though. Like the biggest nit that I have to pick would be narration in the app. Like, I mean, you know, you have this product. Like, could you not have chucked an extra $10 onto it and given, you know, some sort of download code or something, and then taken all that money that you've made at $10 a hit and just paid a voice actor to voice over some of the stuff? Again, is it a big complaint? No. Is it going to stop me from ever playing this game again? Absolutely not. Yeah. I would gladly play this again. But I mean, if you want, you know, to know what I would love to see taken that one step further,
yeah,
get a voice actor. And I'm not saying you need to get Eric Sommer in there. I'm saying you can get like whatever voice actor you want. Like, just get somebody in there to do a little bit of something, you know?
Yeah, that I've actually heard that a few times now. And yeah, really only the intro is voice acted.
Yeah.
Everything when you're actually playing the game isn't. Some people like that because they want to, you know, read it or play it off. Other people don't want to be the group's narrator.
Yeah.
And so don't want that aspect.
The only other thing I think that I'd bring up while we're kind of have our little, there's two things that I would pick at in this game.
Yeah.
And I'm in the same boat with Adam. Are they huge? One probably a little more than the other, but one thing that really I remember stood out to me as being entirely out of left field for me was when there was a puzzle that came up, and all of a sudden it's like you've gone from this like very like everything's on the table and on the board to here, hold my phone and like try to
solve this weird
little random puzzle that nobody else looks at. So all of a sudden you've gone from a game where everybody's focusing on the middle of the table to everybody's looking up at the sky while one dude has a phone in their hand. Yeah. And they're,
I mean, it, right? If I had like a larger, like, you know, laptop or something, then everyone could kind of look at it, but it is a very,
or like Chromecast it to a TV. Yeah, but
it's a very like individual, it becomes definitely a very,
That's almost a holdover from the first edition. So the first edition actually had physical puzzles that you would have to get out to like solve a combination lock.
See, and I'd almost rather that. Like, I realize that adds bulk and that adds, but that keeps it in the table as opposed to in somebody's hand.
And, and one of the fun things about that was if your character wasn't in the same room as that character trying to solve the puzzle and you tried to help them or tell them what to do, the keeper would get bonus power because like it was, you were like this disembodied voice coming from somewhere. So you would start causing insanity to those people because you were trying to tell them how to do things without being in the room.
Yeah.
So only someone in the same room could be like, hey, I think maybe if you put it over there, otherwise. Yeah. So it was a fun little side mechanic that was good. I think
that was one big nitpicky thing to me was I was so surprised when all of a sudden somebody had that. I had totally
forgotten that. Yeah. When Justin just started like, hold on guys, I got to do a puzzle and just like, do I go take a piss? I guess I'll go get a beer now. Like,
it does create a weird,
it's just so like stoppage out of
in the momentum.
Yeah. It's just, it comes out of nowhere. Right. Like, and it's odd that it seems so out of place because of the fact that you would think that the fact that it has that digital aspect, that in itself kind of brings that together, and you'd think that those don't mesh well together, but they've seamlessly done it. And then just this one thing just kind of, like when Nathan was doing, I don't know what he was doing. Oh, yeah. And he was like, yeah, I got this. And I'm like, I don't have a clue what you guys are talking about.
I just sort of looked over once. I was like, is it green, red, green, green, red? And he's like, no, you idiot. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to go. I'm going to go now. Bye.
So between that, my other nitpicky thing was just time.
Oh, yeah. It's a long game. And
I
get
it. It is a massively long game. Because of how much I enjoyed it, I tend to be more okay with how long that game is, but I can see that being a kind of a big speed bump for some people.
For sure.
Because 2 hours, okay, got it. But once you start like getting past that, you're talking like people are going to get bored. People are going to start, you know, feigning interest. You're going to, like, you lose a lot of things when you start to get into those really long standing games. And so I almost wish that there was more kind of those shorter ones, which I don't know.
There are a few of the shorter ones. Yeah. I think the longest one is 240 minutes.
Oof.
Yeah.
Good God.
4 hours.
4 hours. Yeah. It actually plays five. That's like.
What you doing next weekend?
Yeah.
But this, it's but the same as Dead of Winter, because Dead of Winter has it too, where they have their, Yeah, like it gives you your objectives and they go from short to medium to long to really long. And you're just like, I would love to play those really long ones. But man, I love that game. And I know that I will not be able to actually sit through that many hours of that, because I'm just going to, there's a point where you get to where you're just like, hey, I'm good.
Isn't that where you just bust out a game of Phantom Society in the middle? And,
well, that's almost what you have to do is like play.
Are you doing a puzzle again?
Hey, break up Phantom Society, guys. I'm going to go get some shawarma.
Where's my fish?
I think you almost have to, you've got to plan that shit out, because you got to be like, we're going to show up at 2, we're going to start playing this game, and then dinner's going to be at 5.
We're going to take a break.
Take a break.
It's definitely not, like, I would never just be like, oh, what are you guys doing? You want to play a little game of Mansions of Madness, and then like pick the 4-hour scenario and like, everyone has to agree to that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, and their time frames, from my personal opinion, you take their time frames and you add like 25% probably.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. Because like the one we played said, 60 to 90 minutes. Yep. And I guarantee it took us 2 hours. Yep. There's no way it was an hour and a half.
And I mean, that's usually the first time playing. Yep. You got to add that extra bit.
How many players does this play up to?
5. 1 to 5.
So it is 5 as your max?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's the same as the first edition, except the 5th guy would have to be the keeper.
Yeah. So you can actually, it's a 5-player co-op, which in itself is not easy to find.
Yeah. That's part of the reason. That's an odd number. Yeah.
That's cool.
Very fresh.
Oh, nice.
typical H.P. Lovecraft art, right, guys?
Oh, yeah. It's the same, because it is a Fantasy Flight game. Yeah. So it is.
They've got their claws deep in that one.
They got the art drawn once, and they can use it for every game they have.
Yeah. So we had some of the same characters as
Dexter Drake. As
Elder Sign,
yeah.
He wasn't completely useless this time.
Monterey Jack, baby.
Hey, I was Monterey Jack last time. You stole my character.
Gravedigger.
A little child, I play pretty well. But components were really...
Oh, the production value is spot on.
It's one of those typical, they have 8 million different miniatures for things. I think our only issue was the standee.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the main problems about this game is they carried, because the second edition was compatible with everything from first edition, they even sold conversion kits if you own the first one. The original game had these giant square black plastic bases that you had to plug all the standees into, which would have this little like tile that you would put in, because all the monster would have secret health and a secret attacks, because everything was hidden from the players, and this everything's open. Yeah. So you don't need those anymore. But because it was convertible, all that excess baggage kind of came with it, which is kind of a pain in the ass.
So if you buy the second edition, you don't get the miniatures anymore?
No, you get all the miniatures. So if you buy just the second edition base game, you pretty much get everything plus a little extra that was in, you kind of get a new take on everything that was in the original first edition base game.
Okay. So the standees might not be an issue in the full second edition. You get
the same bases.
Oh, which so it'll is be kind an of issue a pain. No matter what.
So no matter what, my personal plan is to rebase everything because they're horrible. But
Because we actually didn't even use the base for a bunch of them because we
a lot of them they don't need.
We just kind of drop them in and there. Let them lay on their sides. And
all the player characters have good bases and they are really nicely laid out. It's just mainly the monsters are excellent models, poor bases.
Yeah, that's well.
Did you have any other nits?
No, that like the I guess the putting expansions out on the app. I mean, I can see it. I mean, you're either going to pay for a $5 or $10 expansion on an app, or you're going to pay $20 or $30 for a concrete, for like a cardboard expansion that comes with an extra booklet and stuff like that.
Definitely. And they actually almost did the same thing in the, for the first edition, you could get mini expansions. So it would have, it would just be like a pack about 5 inches by like 2 inches, like just kind of a little, and it would just have the cards that you would need to play a different scenario. And then a little, like little rule book all folded up. So it's almost the same thing, except this is just purely digital now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like it's, a, you know, like I can definitely, I can sit here and complain about it, but I mean, really, like, what's the point? Like,
yeah. Is there a point?
Yeah. It's, really? It's, yeah. It's an option and it's
microtransactions it's not, are the now, right?
But I mean, if they put out more short scenarios and like short scenarios are what you're into, then I mean,
and it's an easy way to add life to a game that you already dropped $120 on.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what that's like.
No.
How many?
Don't worry about it.
$100 bills worried. Do we have shrink wrapped around
focus,
here?
Focus, you guys. Focus.
Yeah. No, I don't have any other. Like I said, I'm completely on board, like, with this, which is, you know, like I said, even shocking. Like, when I walked away from the table after playing it, that, you know, when we played it, I was just like, man, I could go for another round, like, right now. Like, the, you know, I didn't expect that. I did not expect to be as brought into it and, like, you know, as gung-ho as it turned out that I was to get another game in.
Tom?
Yeah. I don't really know how my review works when I don't own the game.
Would you keep it?
If I had this game, I would definitely keep it. If I had the first edition, I would definitely upgrade it to the second edition, because this one was way more, I mean, I can't say one way or the other if it was better or not, but like not having to set things up, I think the app brings in a lot of expandability, not having to worry about who's going to end up having the job of being the freaking rules manager.
Yeah.
Because not all groups are going to be cool with that. Like, it's just, it's a better way to go not having that. If you can avoid it or make it an option, I guess. I would definitely pick this one up if I didn't have Justin already owning the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought it was great. I thought you come up with stories and you come up with exciting moments with your friends, which I think is the biggest thing about
board games. There's a lot of stuff that you can remember from this playing through a game
like
this.
Exactly. Like we're probably going to be talking every once in a while about how, you know, Debbie was a character that was running around with a whiskey and a gun, like shooting people in the kneecaps because she was like 16 years old. Hilarious.
So out of character.
Fucking Adam, like, just playing around with fucking bookshelves the entire time while the rest of us are getting mowed on by cultists. Like, just so ridiculous. It was a really good time.
Yeah, I've actually changed my... I came into this as a 4, which was, if you get the chance to play it, do it. And I've actually upgraded it. I'm actually willing to give this a 5 out of 5, which is, I'm actually quite surprised with myself even. I don't think I ever thought I'd give an H.P. Lovecraft game a 5 in and of itself, because theme-wise, not my thing. But reality is, this game is done so well, and it so smoothly transitions that world between the digital and the tabletop. I love it. It sits very Gloomhaven-ish with me, which it hurts me to say. But even at $120, the amount of playthroughs that you're going to get out of this, it's worth every penny of it. I think I'm shocking the hell out of myself, and I'm giving her a 5. Buy it, play it, love it, just do it. It's a getter. And I don't like to encourage my husband to buy games, by the way.
So I'm on my phone right now buying a copy of the game. If anything, just going to get it shipped to the house.
Anyone's free next weekend. Not...
Yeah. H.P. Lovecraft and Cthulhu mythos and all that sort of stuff is not something I've ever really been overly excited about. It's never really tickled me. Tentacles and tickling. Yes, I realized what I just said. Marker.
Sorry.
So I Like I said, I found myself super excited about playing this game. As soon as I walked away from the table, all I could really think about was, man, I really hope we can get another game of that in soon. Like, I'd like to play that again. I'd like to, you know, I want more. And I haven't had that feeling. I, it takes a lot to get me to that point where I'm like, man, you know what? Like, let's do it again. Like, let's go forget whatever the hell else we got going on. Like, let's just go back and revisit Mansions of Madness. With that being said, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm going to give this thing like an 8.5. The only reason I'm giving it 8.5 out of 10 is because, like, I don't know that I would be comfortable sitting through some of the longer scenarios. I think that that would take some build up for one, and it would take like some planning for two, which is another thing that doesn't necessarily go over super well.
I think you'd get there though.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think I would too.
A couple short ones. I think that you would.
Sure.
Short.
Yeah.
Yeah.
their version of short. I think after you play a couple of those, the long ones. That's why I gave it a 5. I don't think the long ones are going to be quote unquote long anymore. At that point,
they wouldn't feel tedious. Yeah.
If I can just have like a little like one of the reasons I actually played the longest one just with my brother, and yet. Pretty much takes up a day, but part of the reason it's so long is it's because you're going to multiple locations. So you're building the map, taking it down, building it, taking it down, building it. So it's very possible. I think they actually added a save function as well. So you could just do one part of it, save it, take a break, go do something, come back and load it up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. Like I said, at the end of the day, I mean, it's an 8.5. Things that would push it higher. Again, really, it's a personal thing. It's a personal thing. I don't know that I would be able to go through and play some of the longer scenarios. That's one thing that kind of brings it down a little bit. Again, the small nitpick about a voice actor, right? Like your Fantasy Flight, like you guys basically have a license to print money. Cha-ching. Like, get your crowbar out, pry open your wallets, and pay somebody to do some voiceovers. Like it would take the game to that next level.
Oh, definitely.
And you know that they're making money off of this no matter what.
It's Fantasy Flight.
Well, but it's H.P. Lovecraft, right? Like you have a very large community of people that are gonna invest in this just because of the thematics.
Sure. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So it's not even a risk versus reward for them anymore. At this point, it's like they're just either they overlooked it or they're being cheap, one of the two. Like, there's no good reason for it.
Yeah, no. It's like I said, this game is worth playing, and don't let the price tag scare you away from it. You will get your money's worth out of this game. Yeah,
there's a lot of hours in it.
There's a ton of hours. If you break it down to, you know, hours played versus cost of the game, I mean, I can easily see, you know, if you're serious about it, I can see you getting 60, 80, 100 hours out of this game, especially if you're starting to play some of the longer scenarios, if you're that into it. So what does that make your return on investment? Like, oh, it cost me $1 an hour for one person to play this game.
Yeah.
Except there were 5 of us. Come on. Like that's an easy sell. Easy sell. Great game. Great game.
Yeah. This is a weird position for me. This is the first time it's been my game. So it's like, yeah, oh, this is how Tom feels. All right. But no, like this is for me a solid 2 thumbs up, must recommend game for me. And yeah, part of that is because I've played this game through both editions with many people. And I don't know if I've played it with anyone who hasn't enjoyed it, even with people that aren't a fan of long board games and aren't really big into the theme at all. Everyone kind of enjoys having their character and having the story develop around them rather than just being handed something or being able to see everything right away. Like it's a very nice kind of story-based game. I mean, some people might have problems with the app, but I think it really streamlines the experience.
Sure.
And if you really want the all versus one hardcore mode, I'm sure you can find a edition of the first edition. But those are starting to get rarer and rarer, so this might be your only chance to get the second. But yeah, no, I love it.
I like that. Sorry, totally random. I like the fact that in Elder Signs, I felt like the H.P. Lovecraft piece was like jammed down your throat. I feel like this is it's much more subtle.
Yeah, you're going to, we went to a house to try to investigate some disturbances or disappearances, and it just so happened that the, what is it, the Lamb of Many Hooves or whatever was
it was hiding.
I can't remember
what weird goblin. Like that.
Goat with a thousand young or some shit. Yeah. Was the one being summoned or something. Not good. Can't remember.
It was not, like, it definitely was not jammed down your throat that it was H.P. Lovecraft. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And I guess one other thing I should add is some people might be scared away that there's only so many scenarios, but the way I look at it is I've probably played the first scenario 6 times so far, just because I bring it over and I play it with other people and I'm still not bored with that scenario. Like, I still enjoy it. Mm-hmm. There's still different things to find out, and there's different ways that sometimes the app can move things around. And every time you're going to have different characters and different people. If you're only playing with the same group of people, yeah, you're probably going to get bored with scenario 1 after a bit, but there's a lot of scenarios. I don't know the exact number, but you know, you can look that up beforehand. And they have a fairly large timestamp, so you're not going to get bored fast with this.
Yeah. No, and that's cool.
Very cool.
Tom, would you like to plug us?
Excuse me?
Oh, yeah.
Yikes.
Give us some plugs.
If you like this episode, please like, subscribe, and give 5 stars and whatever your feedback is on whatever thing you found this on. I'm not entirely sure what people use these days. These days, you youngins.
Yeah, that's
with your apps. Share it with a friend if you think that somebody might like it. Share it with somebody you don't like if you think they might like it. Just help get us out there. This would be great. If you need to get a hold of me specifically, I'm at Team Rage, T-O-M, at Team Rage Tom, on Twitter. And you can also get a hold of us collectively on Twitter at CGS Podcast. Or you can send us an email at collapsinggameshelf@gmail.com. We also have a website, thecollapsinggameshelf.com. Debbie, go.
All right. You can get me on Twitter at Mrs. Wynn, MRSWHYN. I'm also on, what's that other thing called? Instagram.
Insta.
The Mrs. Dot Wynn. The CGS podcast on Twitter, you'll be hearing from me. If you say something nice, I will, I'll bring it to the table. If you say something mean, I'll, you know, think about it and wonder how much of Tom's feelings will be throwing out the window if I bring it forward, but we'll definitely try to take as much of your criticism and thoughts and comments into account. If there's something you guys think we should play, something you guys want us to know, okay, give us a shout. Otherwise, Adam.
So I just as an aside, I quickly looked up how many scenarios are available right now. So as with the expansions that are currently released, there are 19 scenarios available. And then in the fourth quarter of 2019, there will be another expansion coming out, which is going to include 3 more scenarios. Now, I don't know how many of these are just like digital expansions that you just get on the app and how many of them are actual, you know, plastic and cardboard and shrink wrapped expansions. I don't know. I just quickly looked it up.
Those lovely, lovely minis.
Yes, lovely minis. But I mean, like if you're looking for longevity and replayability, I mean, 19 scenarios is that's quite a bit in the grand scheme of things.
Oh, yeah. That's probably 3 days worth of content.
Getting a hold of me, however, you can find me on Twitch if you are a Twitch viewer. I am on twitch.tv/ForTheWin, ForTheWhyn. Twitter and Instagram at ForTheWin, ForTheWhyn. And my website, ForTheWin.com. Same spelling. Get there, do it, do the thing.
And yes, you should. Hi, Justin here, your resident Luddite. I currently have no social media handle, though, you know. By the time this comes out, I may.
Yeah, you keep saying you might do it.
Well, you know, sometimes we record these in batches, and it's not always time has passed.
We don't have to tell them that.
Well, you can edit that out. All right. So, but if you want to get a hold of me, you can always use the email address or the Twitter. I will either check it or be told to check it. and I'll see what's going on.
I'll make sure Justin gets your messages. You send us a tweet at CGS Podcast and you say Justin ... and you leave. I will make sure he gets that message.
Fantastic. See, everyone's
are
willing
much more
to help.
Protected than Tom's.
It's all gonna work out.
But no matter what, you'll find a way to get a hold of us.
Just tie it to a dove and send it through the window, and it will find
just a message in a bottle.
All right, stuff.
Fantastic.
Do we know what we're doing next week, Tom?
Let me check this thing over here. Let me check the randomizer.
Ooh, let me press this on button.
Do you want to push the button?
I'm going to push the button. I'm right here. I'm just going to boop.
Unearth.
Holy shit, she just crawled over my shoulder.
Holy shit! This is unearthed. You can't see the box. Great. Which is why Tom usually says these things.
This is fantastic.
Debbie is holding up the box.
This is great audio.
The invisible audience.
Next week we're going to be playing Unearthed.
This makes excellent pod.
Rebuild, remember.
Oh. I'm intrigued by the box.
It's a very nice looking box.
It's very like geodesic.
It is by Brotherwise.
Unearthed by Jason Harner and Matthew Ransom. Yeah, so I can't remember what this one's about. I'm sure we'll find out.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out and report back to you.
All right. Fantastic.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. Stay safe. Have fun.
Bye.
And play more board games. Bye.
Isn't that what's his name's thing?
What?
Don't they say that on tabletop?
I don't listen to tabletop.
All right. I don't think you can say that. Well, I'll cut this out. It'll be fine. Bye.
I can say what I want. It's a free country.